Greetings and welcome to the third episode of Dragons and Starships. I'm CJ McKee, your twisted but yet also gentle host.
I'm Angus Day. I'm the sci-fi weirdo of the bunch.
I think we can both claim being the weirdos.
Oh, okay. I write science fiction, and CJ talked me into this podcast, and we're kind of addicted to it now.
Yeah, we were pretty bummed last week when we couldn't do our recording, thanks to some technical issues, but we got that all worked out, obviously, and we're back up and running. So what we'd like to do now is start with In the News.
Okay.
And from what I understand, there's a new beer coming out. Why don't you tell us about that, Angus?
Yeah, both CJ and I are kind of wondering if this isn't an April Fool's joke, even though the article we saw said it wasn't. But there's a official Star Trek beer called Klingon Warnog, apparently brewed by Tin Man Brewery in Indiana. So we're going to put out a request to any of our listeners that'd like to send us a sample of that. We will be happy to review it online, on the air, on the podcast. Yes.
Yeah, and we require a case at least, I mean, just to make sure.
A case per host, yes.
That's correct.
Moving on, last weekend, before the aborted podcast, I went to attend AnomalyCon for one day, and there's a lot of conventions all around the country, and Colorado's not immune to them. This particular convention is steampunk science fiction based. I don't know I think most people know what steampunk is, but quite basically it's alternate timeline. What if steam technology had carried us into the 21st century, had carried us to other planets, that kind of thing. Firefly would be considered steampunk. Do the elements of they're flitting around but still using conventional firearms on other planets and worlds. Wild Wild West was steampunk. That's give you an idea of what the genre is. You go to these conventions, and people really put a lot into their costumes. You even have steampunk versions of Star Wars and Star Trek. There was a Boba Fett there with a bronze riveted helmet and a steam-powered rifle. Even a Darth Vader. Darth Vader's walking around in a steampunk garb. So they usually have a lot of program sessions, panels and things where you meet and talk with authors or people that write music or even do podcasting. It lasts for 3 days, like most of the conventions that hit Colorado. And that's pretty much how I spent last weekend.
Sounds like you kept busy.
Yep, no moss on me.
No moss. Well, that's a good thing. I didn't know you take a shower at least once a week,
yes,
right?
Yes, there is that. Anti-moss soap.
Did you get a chance to actually interview anybody or talk at length about anybody's projects? Or?
Oh, by the time I did get there, and I talked to people in the vendors hall about their projects and their crafts. I didn't do any interviews because reading in the rules when I was getting ready to go there, I realized that I hadn't applied for a press badge. And I really didn't want to go in there and then turn around and get asked to leave. So I just, I'll keep it on my list for next year if I go back, that I'll apply for a press badge and try and speak to some folks. I will be at another convention in June, which is Denver Comic Con, June 13th, 14th, and 15th. Woohoo! And I'll be sharing a booth, and I'm going to see if people want to do impromptu interviews when they come by the booth for make-believe books. I wish I had gotten some interview material. I need to think about that and plan it in advance next time, get a hold of the schedule. But CJ kind of grabbed me into this podcasting thing, and I'm still figuring out that there are things that I can do like that. So one added bonus from this, since I was a pre-subscription visitor to AnomalyCon, or I'd gotten one of the advanced sales tickets, Kevin J. Anderson had donated a bunch of hardback books and they're under his pen name, Gabriel Mister. I got a copy of The Martian War for, well, not for free, but complimentary with having bought my ticket in advance.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was happy.
Just, and, you know, you need to really add to your library anyways. It's very, very lacking.
Yes, it's downright anorexic.
Yeah, so.
I did manage to talk to a couple of authors, one of who has gotten back to me. We may be interviewing Amy Kessler in the future here.
Awesome. That would be great.
She's flipping through my notes here. The book I got of hers is In the Light of the Moon. And she writes paranormal romance. She's pre-happening, so we'll try and get her on here and share the airwaves.
Yeah, it would be awesome to have her as a first guest. I mean, that would work out perfectly.
That's pretty much all that went on there, and then we've had the week of work.
Oh, yes, the ever evil make money to pay bills.
Soul
recycling that we go through day after day.
Soul crushing on the wheel. So
the grinding, the blisters on the hands.
So with that happy fungus note, go ahead, TJ.
The blisters on the hands and the fungus on the feet.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's hope the fungus stays on the feet. So
would suck if it traveled elsewhere.
With that happy note, let's move on to, we have a question we decided between the two of us we'd attack this week. If you could bring any fantasy or science fiction story to modern day times, what would that be?
Ever since I saw, even before this, ever since I saw Jurassic Park 2, where they brought the T-Rex into the middle of San Diego, running around terrorizing people, knocking things down, eating people, crushing cars, et cetera, et cetera. It made me think back to how cool it would be to have any of these stories or movies, especially ones involving whether it's dinosaurs or, in, of course, in my case, dragons, or any type of fantasy character into modern-day times and somehow incorporate them into how the way it is now. Not necessarily that they have adapted to these particular races being in modern-day times, but showing how it would be if they either appeared or were brought into modern-day times, which would include every aspect. It would be, in my case, The Hobbit. It would be still called Middle-earth, or at least in their eyes. It would involve the dwarves, the elves, wizards, dragons, of course, and even Sauron. Sauron can poke his ugly little head up there on occasion. That would be something that would be interesting to see how that would interact with modern-day times, what people in this day and age would do and how they would react to those type of people. My thought, and then the way I look at it is, it goes back to, one, a TV series that used to be on, that aliens had landed. They were originally slaves, and their slave ship crash-landed on Earth. And what they did is they were incorporated into the American life. And they had their own section of the city where they hung out mostly.
Oh, Alien Nation?
Alien Nation, yep. That's the one. And it was absolutely fantastic. The movie was great. The series was even better, especially as time went by. And the following movies that they, I think there was three of them, if I remember correctly, that they created after the series ended. And I picture it something like that. How are modern people going to be interacting with people that originally didn't exist in their eyes, at least not in modern times? So bringing these type of people out of the woods, so to speak, the dwarves, the elves, wizards, could be even Gandalf appears, like is either reborn or reappears somehow for whatever reason. And all of a sudden now there's magic that people have to deal with, not just their everyday lives and technology, but the magic and the timeless beings that lived in the world of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, of course. And so when I saw the movie Jurassic Park 2 and they had the dinosaur running around, I could picture the same type of thing happening with old characters brought into the current modern world. And I would love to see that. I think that would be a fantastic story. I think they're actually trying to do something similar to that now with Once Upon a Time. that would be the closest that I've seen to bringing fantasy stories into modern day time. That and Grimm. Have you ever seen Grimm?
I've seen trailers for Grimm. I've actually seen episodes of Once Upon a Time. I thought that was pretty well done. I especially like Rumpelstiltskin. Can't remember his actor's name, but that guy. What's his name?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to look that
yeah.
up.
Yeah. So he was in The Full Monty, and he played Gas in The Full Monty. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean. But he really pulls off a wide spectrum of roles, and when he transforms into the evil dwarf Rumpelstiltskin in this thing, he really is disgusting. I was pretty happy with that. Grimm, I probably need to put that on my list since I'm hanging out with CJ now.
Yeah, you're going to have to put up with a lot of stuff now that we're hanging out online. Robert Carlyle is the actor that played that
part. Oh, okay, yeah. He's also in Stargate Universe playing
yep.
Dr. Rush.
Which he also did a fantastic job.
Yep. Shame they don't keep series going that everyone likes, but whatever.
Well, unfortunately, I think Hollywood has their own idea of what is considered a success, and apparently it just wasn't working for them.
Just like book publishers.
Exactly. We kind of know how that works. So, but yeah, I've watched these shows. I am falling behind on Once Upon a Time, so I haven't been able to watch as many as I would have liked. Grimm, I've seen quite a few of them. Again, they do bring some characters in that are like elves, and mostly it's more of the horror type. Characters like werewolves and vampires and boogeyman, that type of thing. But they also have fairies and other type of fantasy characters they do bring in on occasion. And it's done very well. It's done, again, it's ancient or old folklore being brought into the modern times, and they pull it off very well, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, I attempted to start watching a series with my son called Hemlock Grove that was, I think it was made for Netflix series. And, yeah, let me just save you the trouble right now. It's not worth an hour of attention span. So just moving on.
I'll remember that. Is it kind of reminiscent of the sci-fi specials, sci-fi channel specials?
Well, they actually made a series out of this. But the thing was, it's like, heavy evening drama with werewolves and maybe a vampire or two. It's more like Dynasty kind of drama kind of thing. It's really horrible.
And on that note, I'll just kind of strike that from my record so that I don't put myself through that.
Yeah, spend it watching MST 3000 or something that, if it is bad, at least you have some snarky going with it.
I'll have to make up some snarky of our own, I guess.
Yeah. So
that's what I would definitely like to see. Again, with these other shows they've brought in and they've done very well with, I think they could pull it off. If they brought The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings series characters into the modern times. It would be very interesting to see.
I'd be interested to see that. I'd especially like to see people that are frustrated with everyday problems and then all of a sudden someone from one of those stories walks in and just kind of like figures it out like it's a no-brainer, and they're just left there thinking, oh my, you know, we're not the advanced ones.
That's the way I would look at it. The abilities they have, the immortality of the elves and Gandalf and the abilities that he has, as well as the abilities the elves have, and, of course, learning a new language, basically, bringing a new language into the world, or several new languages, is, I would really like to see something built from that. I think that would be a really good series, if done properly.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and I'd kind of like to see someone besides J.J. Abrams work on it, if anything like this happened. I mean, I like him. He does good work, but, you know, we're kind of flooded with J.J. Abrams right now, so.
Yeah, we can make it a point to have a J.J. Abrams bitch fest sometimes.
Give so. Joss Whedon some work, you know.
Yeah, he needs to get loaded up. He's kind of falling behind here. So,
I noticed you tend to approach stuff from fantasy or like even older stories when you phrase that question, modern day times. I come at it from the different direction of bringing something back or bringing change in our perspective that changes our course as a species. So with that in mind, I kind of favor works by Peter Hamilton or even Ian Douglas. That was his pen name. He was actually Keith White. Judas Unchained, and there's a book before that. I'm trying to remember what it is right offhand. But it's the human race finally makes it. We're sending a manned mission to Mars. The manned mission lands, and then all of a sudden a wormhole opens, and these really geeky guys from London throw one of their inventors through in a spacesuit, and he just, you know, takes all the drama out of the moment of finally reaching Mars, and that, you know, their technology of wormhole travel has made space travel obsolete before it even got started. Well, and then these two books unload to where there's a Dyson sphere a couple of star systems away that's had a very let's see, they don't know any other way other than killing and conquering things and absorbing their resources. So this Dyson sphere has had them trapped for a lot of years or a lot of centuries, and they get loose. Humankind has to come together to kind of survive. That's in a nutshell. There's plenty more to his stories than that. But Heritage Trilogy by Ian Douglas talks about how we are a very infantile species and how advanced species will move through the systems, maybe extinguishing life like ours before it can get up to the point where it challenges them. And the whole trilogy and then the Star Carrier series takes us along with the the interstellar version of Marines in their various incarnations doing battle with these advanced aliens and their minions. It'd be nice to see some of that come about, or at least us start moving in a direction to where we're doing something as a species instead of all these different nations and political agendas, which I don't want to go into. But
that's a whole other show.
Yeah, I think we'd just be a lot healthier as people if we had some long-range thing to focus on, a long goal off-world.
I don't know. I sometimes wonder about that. It seems like there's always going to be somebody with an agenda that is going to, the way they look at it is, how can I use this for my own benefit or our own benefit, as opposed to, hey, let's save the human race and band together to prevent this from happening.
Yeah. Well, the common theme in all these seems to be that, you know, there's a density limit of how close we can live together as a species. And as we keep populating this planet, it's that we're approaching that limit. I mean, you know how in Japan people get used to a certain personal space. It's not what you or I would consider a definition. I don't think across the planet we'll ever get to that point of maturity. So we kind of got to do one or two things. We either have to stop populating the planet or we have to, you know, have an outlet other than war. You know?
Speaking of outlets, I guess that would be maybe when the androids finally get created, that's a new way to spend their outlet, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it's I don't want to really think about it, at least not anybody else, but, you know, I think that would be a great outlet.
Oh, yeah. But that's where I come at that question from. It's like we keep sort of approaching, I mean, the whole, a large point of science fiction is to try and give people hope. A lot of readers of science fiction want a story that have, you know, hope or goal or something we're trying to achieve. That's what's kind of interesting is that every time you have a story of hope, it usually proceeds through a process of people being pressured out of their comfort zone. So either we're being attacked or we're getting to the point where we discover technology because we need to change something that's going to hurt us. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think history has shown, especially the more that we read the news, things that are going on, people will pull together, at least most people will pull together to help each other out and battle any type of, whether it's a foe or any type of hardship that's ahead of them. I think we've actually gotten a little bit better about that to a certain extent. I wouldn't say we're quite there yet. We definitely have a lot of learning to do, a lot of other goals, but it just seems like it's not happening fast enough. We've got people, we've got thousands of years of history, and we still have people doing the same things, repeating the same mistakes. We're just not quite there yet. But I do see random acts of kindness and other things that give that little bit of hope. It says, oh, maybe someday.
Yeah.
But that's kind of political. We won't talk about
that. Nah. Boo. All right. Moving on to book reviews. CJ, you're up.
I'd like to point out a series I managed to get through that took me a little time. Unfortunately, I tend to take big breaks between reading books, and which kind of makes me lose touch with some with series because I'll start to forget what was going on in the first part of the series. However, I read the E.E. Knight books, Dragon Age of Fire, and there was, I believe, four books in the series. I was very impressed. It was a very different take on dragons. It mainly focused on dragons. However, it did have typical fantasy characters like dwarves and other similar characters. I won't go too much detail to spoil the book, but the basis of it is there are three siblings that were hatched, and the story starts with all three siblings shortly after their parents are murdered, and they wind up having to go off on their own, and they all have very distinct personalities. And the way he writes this, the way the story goes along, you don't really know for sure who's going to come out on top. Because in this world, it's kill or be killed, and you do what you have to survive. And if that means taking, you know, turning dwarves or humans into a steaming pile of ash, or even finding them a nice tasty lunch treat. He calls humans hominids in his books, by the way. It's very interesting how they really follow the development of the characters, their personalities, and what they have to go through. I was riveted. Every time I picked up the books and started reading them, I was riveted. And just one, it was a definite page-turner on each of the series. I wanted to keep reading and keep reading, find out more. And, okay, I'll try to stop here. And, of course, I couldn't stop there and kept reading a little bit more. So it definitely kept your interest, and I felt I really needed to get through the entire series to find out the final results, and I wasn't disappointed. I would highly recommend his books, the Age of Fire series. He does have other books, books on vampires. I believe he wrote most of his vampire books before the Dragon
Actually,
series.
I just looked at Amazon on his list, and he just released April 1st his latest called The Baltic Gambit. It's the latest book in the Vampire Earth series.
Oh, okay. So it must be a continuation of his original series.
Yeah, he's
series.
Got like 11 or so books in that series now, and then the Dragon Age of Fire series is there too.
I haven't read any of his vampire books. Like I said, I'm not that much into reading vampire or other horror story books. Once in a while, I will pick one up, but it's pretty rare. Most of the time, it's either fantasy or science fiction. And, of course, he had dragons in it, so I picked it up. The summary of the story that I read on the back piqued my interest, and I'm glad I read the series. It was a very good series. There were some aspects of it that were a little bit, I wouldn't quite write it that way, but, you know, that's just me. I mean, the way he writes it, I was pleased with his series. The three siblings are shown separately, and he really focused on those characters specifically. Whenever there was any other interaction with, like I said, the dwarves or any of the other beings, it was still all from his perspective, that character's perspective.
Okay.
And it was enjoyable to read that way. It kept things more mysterious when things were going on that the character didn't know about. Eventually, again, I won't get too much away, but eventually all three of them wind up together again. And for good or ill, they wind up together And we'll just leave it at that. So, but I highly recommend his series. I think he did a very good original take on dragons and the stories of dragons, especially the ones showing them from birth until their adulthood. They do age, and you see the different aspects of them as they age through his writing. So definitely pick those books up if you get a chance, if you haven't already, or if you only read his vampire series and are interested and you like his vampire series, then I would strongly recommend reading this series as well.
Well, CJ, you've already got me. I'm going to probably try and find that at the library to get it. I've looked at his pricing on Amazon. I'm not a fan of that, but the Vampire Earth series, I did read that, and it's not your typical vampire thing. So it's really more science fiction, in that the Curians are another race from another planet. They invade, or the bad side of the Curians invade Earth. They set loose a plague called the rabies that pretty much turns into the zombie apocalypse. Anyone who comes down with it, you know, goes nuts and starts trying to eat people. And the Curians have these avatars that run around that actually do siphon the blood and stuff out of people. And that's where the vampire thing comes on. But they're really trying to take over and set up little fiefdoms all over the planet. It's not typical vampire, but it is, you know, it's Vampire Earth. It's E.E. Knight's version of vampires.
Vampires in space!
Vampires coming through the trans-dimensional tree, actually. They don't even use spaceships. They have, like, portals. And the good Curians that are fighting the other ones come through and pick certain humans to give added powers to, and that's where this main protagonist, David Valentine, keeps gaining powers as the books go on. So he's actually one of the few that can run down one of these vampires and snap his neck like a twig. Anyway, so that wasn't on my list for reviews. The book that I was going to review is the Viril Codex by Ben Manning. And it started out being pretty good. It's about this mansion, manor house in Berlin, near the Brandenburg Gate. The occupant of it is pretty old. She's a descendant from people that had a religious cult called the Thule Society, and she's been manipulating things ever since Nazi Germany into present 21st century. And it starts getting... Okay, we talked one of the episodes earlier about suspension of disbelief. The way the author addressed how she was planning to take over the world and her secret lair of Nazi UFOs and stuff just kind of ruined the whole book for me in the last third of it. So I'm going to leave it.
Nazi UFOs.
Yep. Flying saucers. I wasn't won over by the writing style of the book. It was all right as long as the photojournalist and her psychically connected widower husband were the two main characters being talked about back and forth. Then you start getting side characters in there that have psychic powers, and it kind of gets convoluted.
Goes off on a tangent, doesn't really stick with the original story.
Yep, gets lost. And that's pretty much where my book review is going to end. I've read a couple of books since then, but nothing that I really want to talk about either. It's getting a little dry here lately. I did find a book that was The Forbidden Mind, that's part of the Forbidden Trilogy by Karpov Kincaid. And I went to go do a review for it, and I looked at Amazon, and the person already had 134 reviews. So I kind of backed off on it. It's a well-written book. It's kind of an alternative X-Men storyline, but that's where I kind of left it. I'm not going to pick up the other two. I'm not really that interested in chasing that down.
Is that an independent book, the Viril Codex, or is that
That's independent.
Okay. Because it sounds familiar. I think either you have already done a review on it or mentioned it.
I put it up on my blog, and I put it up on Goodreads. I didn't go any further with it since the person already has plenty of people pulling for him. So.
I haven't read the review on that one that you wrote or any information other than what I saw on your site there. So I don't really have any input for that one. Now we've got some movies coming up here pretty soon.
Okay.
Coming to a theater near you. There's two movies that we're going to look at. One of them is Under the Skin. I have to confess, I don't know much about this one. I just now went online to take a look at it and get a little information. So, Angus, can you fill us in?
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson is having a really big year this year. Opening today was Captain America Winter Soldier and her kind of independent film, Under the Skin. Now, Under the Skin, she's an alien and hanging around Glasgow, Scotland, and she keeps enticing guys into her van, and then she kind of consumes them in some manner or other, but she uses her sex appeal to get the Glaswegian guys into the van and head off to parts unknown. I don't know what the end of it. I don't know what book it came from, but it's listed on IO9 as one of the non-sequel, non-reboot films of the year. I like that about it.
Well, that in of itself is a special thing. You never hear too much about any original movies anymore, except through the independent groups, and the same with books. A lot of new books coming out through the independent artists. Not too much coming through the Big Five. So I'm actually kind of curious about it. It does remind me of, and we're going to get to our B-movies later, and maybe I'll throw this in at the end, but there was a movie called Life Force, and there was a woman that virtually walked around the entire movie without a stitch of clothing on, and sucking the life out of guys who were stupid enough to walk up to this strange woman and kiss her and do whatever else that she was willing to let them do.
That was one of the first movies I saw Patrick Stewart in.
Oh, that's right. He was in that. So, yeah, it's probably not his best movie. I'm sure he doesn't talk about it much. But the only good thing about it was this naked French woman walking around without a stitch of clothing on everywhere. And that's probably to the point where it was somewhat interesting.
Good thing.
But it the way this movie is described, it reminds me of that. So I don't know if this is kind of their take on Life Force or what. So I am kind of curious to see it. Now, another one I'm looking forward to, only because of the fact that they're combining forces with future and past X-Men, and that would be the X-Men Days of Future Past. I did read the comic book series many, 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 many moons ago, so I'm really curious to see how they pull this off. With First Class, I was put off a little bit just how some of the origins were and how they managed some of the other characters. So I'm really curious to see. I know there's one flaw already where Wolverine is the one who goes back in time. And originally in the comic books, it was Kitty Pryde.
Huh.
So, yeah, so they've right off the bat, of course, they're going to take their most popular character and beef him up even more. So, yes, I love Wolverine. I think Hugh Jackman does a fantastic job. They are bringing back some of the original players like Ellen Page for Kitty Pryde. From the trailers, it looks like it might be action-packed. Yes, it's hard to tell how well they've handled the characters in this particular movie.
Well, how they handled the story, and they've already veered away from the storyline of the comic books, which I didn't know because I didn't read them. But yeah, sometimes when they venture off into reinventing stuff like the new Star Trek,
they're
going to gain and lose people. You know, did you see today that Hugh Jackman put in his 2 cents that he wants his Wolverine replacement to be Channing Tatum?
No,
I don't know. I'll have to see Channing's performance in another film coming up this summer called Jupiter Ascending before I make a verdict on that. But I kind of thought they had run out of X-Men stories to do.
Well, there's plenty to do. As a matter of fact, there's a continuation of the series where some of the characters were involved in the Infinity Gauntlet series, which the Avengers are eventually going to get involved with. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they do the crossovers, if they do the crossovers, because I believe Spider-Man was also involved. So we'll find out. We'll see what happens with that. I'm looking forward to it just because it's Marvel. It's X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
Watching everybody throw their powers around and do all that cool stuff. I mean, I am looking forward to that. And once again, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. He does a fantastic job. It always comes down to the writers in any movie. The actors take what's given to them and have to provide to their characters what the writers have put in their mouths. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this one after some of the backlash they received from First Class.
I agree. I actually, I'm on go on your hate scale here, but I actually enjoyed First Class. Kind of like seeing the...
Okay, so the show's over now, and Angus is going his way. No, just kidding. No, I did like it. Again, it was an interesting take on the characters. There were certain aspects of it that I obviously deviated, again, from the origins and whatnot. I still enjoyed it, though. I think things could have been done a little bit differently, but I'd still watch it again. So, in fact, I have the movie. So, it's just there are things about it that were a little irritating.
So I was a little confused. I don't remember from First Class, but was Jennifer Lawrence playing Mystique in that one? Okay.
Yes, she
was. All right. So.
Yeah, and she does play Mystique again in X-Men Days of Future Past.
So that's another big thing. Ever since Hunger Games and, what is it, Silver Linings Playbook, Jennifer Lawrence is having a tidal wave of success.
Yeah, she's done a great job. Everything she's been in, I think she's done. I haven't seen all of her movies, but she's done a fantastic job. So she's definitely an up and comer and well on her way to bigger and better things as
quite
the time
goes by. She's in American Hustle too.
I saw that. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I saw that she was in that. And I watched some scenes from the movie with her in it, and I wouldn't have known it was her. She did such a good job. I was really surprised that was actually her. So kudos to her. I think she's well on her way to an excellent career. And now we have our movie of the week.
Hey, sound effects guy. Can't depend on
sound
me.
Effects.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. All right. Finally got it to work. Right. Yeah.
All right, I'll stop echoing those.
All right, movie. Yeah, what do I need with sound effects? I'll
just
use you
plug
for now.
Me in. I second that motion. CJ has the floor.
Okay, our movie of the week, Fifth Element. The reason I chose this movie was it definitely ranks as one of my top favorite movies. I'm not going to say number one. It's really hard for me to choose one movie above all that's the best of the best of the best. So with that said, I will say I have a top nine. And in that top nine is definitely The Fifth Element. Might even be fifth. You never know. The Fifth Element features Bruce Willis and Mila Jovovich, if I'm pronouncing that right.
I think so.
And she is playing the
Lilu.
Fifth Element. Lilu. And I'm not even going to bother trying to pronounce the rest of her name. She plays the Fifth Element, the supreme being, who must return to Earth because evil has returned to Earth. And Bruce Willis somehow winds up in the middle of all this. In addition to some other wacky characters, including a priest and a priest in training, and they wind up having to go off planet Earth to go seek the stones, the elemental stones, in order to defeat this evil. It is both a fun, funny, wacky, engaging, emotional, and highly futuristic, and again, here's that whole suspension of disbelief, where some of the characters and aliens and even right down to the evil being kind of makes you go, okay, this is borderline on fantasy, non-realistic, not as much science involved in it. But like I said, it's a fun movie. It's not so much, while I'm watching the movie, I'm just enjoying it.
I'd want to go to a vacation planet called Flossin's Paradise and then be stuck on a hover ship in the atmosphere. But yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, especially with Ruby Rod screaming in your ear every 5 minutes. Yeah, exactly. No, he's one of the characters that really stands out because of how wacky he is and how wacky he plays the character. And I'd highly recommend, if you haven't seen this movie yet, if you're any kind of, even if you're not necessarily a science fiction fan, just watch it. It's just so much fun and hilarious, but it's not, it's a comedy that's not really meant to be a comedy per se.
I think one of the funniest moments was when Bruce Willis' character shoved the military people that were visiting him in his bed / shower, and they were shrink-wrapped and freezing and about to suffocate when he finally pulled them out.
Yeah. Yeah, they live in these little tiny apartments, or at least Bruce Willis did, his character, and everything's automated, which I could easily see happening here sometime in the future. So it was just a lot of fun. Like I said, I when I first saw that movie and eventually got the DVD, I watched that thing over and over and over again. I enjoyed it that much because there's so many things in there that are going on that you don't even see right off the bat. It's a very busy movie, very action-packed, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I did, too. Moving on, we're blinded by B-movies. CJ's influence is kind of eroding me, so I ended up watching Laser Blast. Wow, I agree with you, CJ. The guy running around with the laser weapon is just... He's regressing to something, but it looks more like he's permanently taking a bong hit, you know, every time he needs to use the weapon. He's got this rolled back eye look like he's going to Nirvana.
Well, if he was going to Nirvana, that would at least be something. But yeah, he kind of looks like he's trying to be a combination of an ape.
Surfer.
And a surfer something. Yeah, it's just I don't understand why they felt that in order for him to look like he was transforming into some sort of alien that he had to, wobble around like he was turning into kind of a simian
MST
or something. I don't know.
Of it. It was funny because they actually had more airtime for the bumbling deputies that were hanging around town than they did for him. And every time they would pan to the one heavyweight bearded deputy, the one robot on MST would, are we ready for some football? It was great snark. I mean, that part of it was excellent. That was what made it worth spending the time watching it.
I was going to say that in of itself would be enough for me to watch that movie again. So, but yeah, that's definitely falls in the category of B movies, maybe even C movies.
Definitely C, I think, actually. It's, or on the downside, maybe B minus. I followed that up. My daughter was visiting when I fulfilled your request that I watch that, and Netflix suggested the next one was Werewolf from 1995, and that one definitely had B from the starting blocks because Richard Lynch is like the modern king of B sci-fi movies, or one of them, and he factored pretty heavily in this thing. Students digging up bones in the desert in the southwest, and they find a misshapen head that's got fangs sticking out of it. The one assistant on the project starts taking the skull and cutting people with it or smacking them with it and watching them turn into werewolves. Yeah. And
Alrighty, interesting enough,
there was a Joe Estevez in there. I was looking at it. It looked like a very heavy set Emilio Estevez. I didn't know it was Joe Estevez when I saw him. He's in there for like three scenes, maybe. So I got curious and bored while I was watching it. So I IMDb'd him, and he's got a book out called Wiping the Sheen Off, which I imagine might be kind of interesting to get and read. I don't read many bios, but I got a feeling that...
Wiping the Sheen Off, that's almost a TMI
moment, right there.
I
think that might be an actual fun read someday. So I did get something out of that besides... Well, the MST crew were getting snarky on it also, but it was really weird because there's this one scene where one of the guys, a security guard, gets infected with this werewolf thing, and he doesn't... He's just feeling ill, and it's at the end of his shift, and he's trying to drive home, and this boob who injected him, is like following him around, waiting for him to change, and the guy finally, like, he's changing while he's driving, which explains a lot of the traffic behavior I see on my commute, but he ends up flipping the car and burning.
I knew it.
So, okay, there's one guy we don't have to pay for anything more.
Oh, wow. And they're just, this person's just following around to watch the footage.
Like, that's how B-movie it was. He went around the same damn block maybe five times.
Wow. Well, you got to say one thing for Richard Lynch. He's been employed and keeps getting work.
Yeah,
he's been getting work for some time now.
I think he's actually one who passed last year, but he's been in every B science fiction movie that he was in. A lot of the ones with David Carradine when he was doing that kind of thing.
Oh, that's right, David Carradine. All those it was like a whole group of people that were in the same type of movies, usually B movies, or just really bad, whether it was science fiction, fantasy, whatever it may have been at that time period. You're looking from anywhere
from
even
the 70s,
back to 90s, right in that
area. I guess maybe this was higher in Richard Lynch's category. He was the villain in Chuck Norris's Invasion USA. That's his Oscars plea right there.
Well, be careful what you say about Chuck Norris, because we just started the show, and I don't want him, you know, overhearing this by accident. Yeah, it's we love you, Chuck.
Yeah,
we love you.
What CJ said.
Into our fantasy faux pas, I have to bring up one movie that, although it did have dragons in it, I was rather disappointed in. And this is the unfortunate consequence of reading a book and then seeing it in movie form. And that would be Aragorn. They took such liberties with this movie as to, in my opinion, they should have called it something else instead of Aragorn. There was some aspects of it that were very good. Some of the actors they chose were very good. And, of course, again, it's a movie about dragons, so that in of itself holds my attention and interests me. And they did a fantastic job with the CGI on the dragon, so I was very impressed with that. I hope one of these days Hollywood really just gets to the point where they realize you're better off keeping to the characters and the storyline and the flavor of the book rather than just, you know, willy-nilly saying, no, I think we should do it this way. Let's change this. Let's take that character out. Let's put a new one in, et cetera, et cetera. And pretty much just ruining the whole thing. I went ahead and I bought Aragorn again because it's a dragon movie. It's about riding dragons. It's the whole idea behind the story is I enjoy, but it's really hard for me anywhere near as much as the book. That would be Christopher Paolini. He actually, I don't know if he still lives in Montana, but he was about 15 when he wrote Aragorn. And he was in Montana and he self-published. His parents helped him to get self-published, and he got picked up and subsequently wrote two more books.
Well, it says here that the screenplay was written by Claudio Carvalho from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Maybe that was the mistake.
there's a good joke in there somewhere, but I think we should stay politically correct for now.
I never saw the movie, and I've never read the book, but one thing that would have attracted me to the movie, which I'm just now seeing, I knew that Jeremy Irons was in it. He plays Brom, but I didn't realize that Robert Carlyle was in it. He plays Durza. Got John Malkovich.
Yes. Yes.
Rachel Weisz, Christopher Egan.
Rachel Weisz actually does the voice of
Saphira,
the dragon.
Yeah, it says voice right
Saphira.
There.
She. I love Rachel Weisz. I think she's a fantastic actress, and her voice is perfect for Saphira, in my opinion.
Ever since I saw her in The Fountain, I've enjoyed pretty much everything she's been in, really. I saw her at Enemy at the Gate was the first movie I ever saw her in.
She has a lot of assets, acting abilities. She's very good. So I love Rachel Weisz. No, she's very versatile and has done a lot of different things and always been very impressed with her her acting
skills. Okay, so Aragorn's probably on my book list, not on my movie list.
Start with the book. I would encourage you to watch the movie just so you can see the difference after you've read the book. The first book's a pretty quick read. The two books afterwards are definitely more involved. I enjoyed the second one. The third one I haven't actually had a chance to read yet, believe it or not. I have had other things to read in between, and I still really want to. But, yeah, it's got quite a few pages, and it's a little daunting, so I haven't quite picked it up yet. So I am very curious to see how it ends. I may have to start from the beginning again and go through the whole series. So, but do watch the movie just to get an idea of how what the changes are. And as far as cinematography and the way they did the dragon and the interaction, they did a fantastic job.
All right. So are we at the personal plugs?
Are at the plug-ins. Angus, why don't you go ahead and plug in your books?
As I've done in previous podcasts, I'm the author of the Next You Universe series of books. They're written a standalone. You can find them at www.nextyouniverse.com. And I also write a blog, angus48.wordpress.com, where I review books and occasionally rant. You can find me, all of my my tags, though, at the Next You Universe, where you can find links to my ebooks, printed books, and audiobooks, which I now have two up that are in podcast radio show format.
My book is called Blood and Bane, The Dragon Sage Chronicles. It's been out since last May. We're coming up on almost a year anniversary for my book. And you can find my book on both Amazon Print and Amazon Kindle, as well as on Smashwords. And if you want any more information about myself or this podcast, you can go to mountaindragonmedia.com. You can also pick up this podcast on Podbean and listen to us there. Once again, my book is Blood and Bane, Dragon Sage Chronicles, both in ebook, Kindle, and in print. And sometime this year I should have my new book coming out, Outcast. I am working on currently, so I should have that out sometime, hopefully the middle of this year. That's my goal. Now, if you have any questions for us, feel free to contact us. You can contact me at mountaindragonmedia@gmail.com.
Sounds good. I'm waiting to read your second book.
I'm waiting to finish my second book, so you can read my second book. It's definitely a long time coming. Yes, please, if you enjoy the show, give us a shout. It's mountaindragonmedia@gmail.com. You can reach us both there or come visit one of our websites that we just gave you. But please, either way, get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. And if you have any questions or you have any ideas or anything that you would like to hear us talk about on the show. Until next time in episode 4, we'll see you very much. Thank you for listening. You guys have a great night.